please remember that the Lucy Pod is not a replacement for professional medical advice. If you have questions or concerns about your own amazing brain, please speak to a medical professional. I'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which I speak to you all today, the peoples of the Kulin Nation. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
Hello everyone and welcome back to the Lucy Pod. I hope that you are all well and are staying safe. Today I have a guest joining me to talk about all things ADHD. Please welcome Kate to the pod. Hi Kate, how are you?
Hi, I'm so happy to be on here. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you for being on. So before we start, tell us about yourself, plug your Instagram, tell us about what you do, who you are, and your interests.
Okay. I'm Kate Kamoshita. I live in Tokyo, Japan. I am originally from Oakland, California, but I've lived in Japan my whole adult life. So 18,
that's awesome.
18 years in Japan.
That's amazing.
And I'm an ADHD educator. I think it's very important that we explain educators are not coaches. There is a difference. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of confusion about that because coaches are very important, but coaches train to be coaches. I'm a teacher by trade. I'm an educator by trade. I have two master's degrees. One's in education. I've worked in education for many years. So just imagine my subject to be ADHD, like you would take a math class and someone would
teach
you about math, right? So all I do is break down the ADHD, like time blindness or any of this, and I explain it in a way for neurotypicals and neurodivergence to sort of understand it better and use that to communicate better.
That's awesome.
My psychiatrist calls me an ADHD interpreter. Like I interpret ADHD for neurotypicals too. And even I guess for ADHD people to understand themselves too, because they'll be like, oh, is that why we do that? Yeah, that's why we do that. I loved it when my friend was like, you know, like putting your phone weird places. She's like, that's not an ADHD. I was like, yeah, that
absolutely
100%
is
an ADHD thing.
Like leaving it in the fridge. Why is it always in a fridge? I'm always leaving my phone in the fridge or on top of the oven.
Mine is always in, like when I'm putting clothes in the closet, it will be in a drawer and then I'll.
Yeah. Mine's in the drawer as well. It's annoying. Okay. So thank you for sharing. So a new thing I want to start doing with my guests, or that I do with my guests, is before we get into the interview, I ask them three questions. So the first one is, when were you diagnosed with ADHD? Then the next one is, what are your current hyperfixations/special interests? And finally, what is an ADHD trait that you feel is unique to you, like only you do it?
Okay. So I was diagnosed at, I'll see if I remember them. Let's see how my working, how that working memory works.
When?
I was diagnosed at 34 years old. Oh my goodness.
Wow.
Oh my goodness. And I am so ADHD. Like I am flabbergasted that it took 34 years to diagnose me. But my story is not unique in that the average age for a woman undiagnosed in childhood is 37 years old. Particularly if you were assigned female at birth growing up in the 80s and 90s, you know, who did well in school, you were not diagnosed. And I was diagnosed at 34. But what's even more interesting to me about that is I stopped drinking 9 years ago. So
awesome.
Because I am an alcoholic, and I was drinking. Mm-hmm. Drinking was self-medicating, 100%. Mm-hmm. And like when you see the studies or talk about addiction studies with ADHD, I fall into that. But I didn't know, because when I stopped drinking, that's when I really felt that hyperactivity. Then normally I would drink to make that feeling go away.
And subdue it.
Yes, because that hyperactivity feeling, which can be described as feeling like anxiety. I like the analogy when people say like a sugar bottle of soda, like when you're just like, ah, It's very hard to explain if you've never had that hyperactivity feeling like inside you where you like want to burst, but you don't know what it is. And I realized that whenever I felt that, that was actually what I was drinking to not feel, because it made me uncomfortable. No. So I don't think I would have gotten diagnosed if I didn't stop drinking. But luckily, I could stop drinking. I haven't had a drink in 9 years.
Very good. That's fantastic. Congrats. That's a long time.
Yeah, and I also share that because I know it's not alone. There's a lot of us. 60% of people with ADHD suffer with substance abuse.
Yeah.
And it's just such a, it messes up getting diagnosed because some people are like, I don't want to diagnose you if you're drinking, but it's like.
Of course. And then you think, oh, maybe this symptom is just a symptom of addiction and it's not a symptom of the ADHD. And it's, yeah, no, it's very, very common. A lot of them.
They're all interrelated, but
of course,
we need to be able to look at people who are struggling with addiction and see how many of those do need help. And then, so I mean, I'm sort of annoyed it took me to stop drinking to get my diagnosis because.
Yeah.
That, and I think if I didn't get my diagnosis and be medicated on these addictive substances that they now, you know, but if they didn't give it to me, I probably, I don't know if I'd still be 9 years not drinking today. So it is important in that. But clearly I was ADHD my whole life, as we were just talking about.
Yes.
So current hyperfixation. Oh, I'm really, my current fixation is actually collecting vinyls. I went from having like.
That's a nice fixation. Yeah, but that's good. That's a healthy one.
It's a cheap one. And my husband is like, you brought home more? Like, what are you doing? I'm like,
I'm going to divorce you. Stop.
Really good album.
What's your favorite one at the moment that you've bought? Like, what's the last one that you bought? The last vinyl?
I just got Demi Lovato's. I don't know the name of the. The one with Sorry, Not Sorry on it.
My God, does Demi Lovato do vinyls? Well, they all do now, don't they?
I mean, there's a lot. Let me see that. I'm going to get the actual name of the one. But Demi deserves that.
I know, Demi's a slay.
She is. And she is also a recovering addict, Miss Lovato.
Yes.
Okay, beautiful.
Oh, I know that one. Yeah.
Tell Me You Love Me.
Nice.
Because Sorry, Not Sorry is one of my favorite Demi Lovato.
So fixation is vinyls.
Yes.
That's a healthy fixation.
Sorry.
My current fixation is true crime interrogations, and it's like not healthy. Well, it's not healthy, but it's like I don't need to be seeing like murderers every day.
I would say we should do a poll. We should do a poll on this. But most people with ADHD listen to true crime, I think. And I know why. I have a theory of why we listen to true crime.
Tell me.
Because we are not going to become murderers, okay? We can't. ADHDers are not serial killers. We do not have the executive function skills to pull that off. we do not have a working memory to live double lives, right?
We have shitty motor skills, so, you know,
we don't clean well enough. We would be like, oh, there's like, and you'd have to remember your story, right? It's like, it'd be so...
bit of crime. So if you are investigating us, don't, you know.
I've talked about this actually in my classes and stuff. Spree killers, maybe. Crimes of passion, 100%. Meticulous serial killer, absolutely not.
No. I don't think there's ever been an ADHD serial killer. And then next week it's like ADHD serial killer uncovered. But no, you are correct. But it's interesting. I was covering a case on this podcast because it involved ADHD, but she wasn't a serial killer. And it was a little girl. She is about 12 and she was on ADHD medication and she murdered her little brother in a fit of, we don't know what.
Okay. Emotional dysregulation.
Emotional distress. But what's sad is people are like,
crime of passion.
Yeah. Oh, no.
That is definitely
crime of passion
for ADHD. Like, because we'd like,
definitely.
But I meant like the true crime stories.
Oh, yeah. Like a killer,
like a hunt, and people are like, they get away with it for a long time, or we'd just be caught immediately. You know, we're not the Ted Bundys of the world. They'd be like, Because also you...
Ted Bundy was not ADHD. He was a lot of other things.
Think about how long you'd have to keep that secret. I can't keep a secret for anything to save my life.
Really? I can keep secrets. I'm really good at keeping secrets. I only tell one other person and it's usually like my mom.
See, you tell one other person though. That's what I'm talking about. If you were a serial killer, you can't tell one other person. You can't tell one
I'd be like, Mom, I killed someone.
Yeah. But I meant like the same as like when I buy a gift for somebody, I'm always like, oh my God. I've got your present. That's where it really shows for me. I could keep a secret if somebody tells me I have to. Like in that sense.
Yeah.
But for the most part.
If it's got to do with me, I'm like.
That's what I'm saying. If it's my own secret, no, I'm not going to keep my own secret. Nah. I'd be like, oh my God, that's what I did last weekend. You'll never guess. You'll never guess.
And then like, okay, I don't want to guess. Okay, well, I'll tell you.
So I think we like true crime because one, it's interesting enough because there's history, there's the whodunit. The story is always the same, okay?
Yeah.
The story does not change. Yep. So for us, it's those things are good for us because it's essentially something we can pay attention to without paying attention to, which is what a lot of
people because I just listen to it while I'm doing my chores.
That's exactly. It's sort of like how we body double with shows that we've already seen a bunch of times because we need a distraction. But not
Real Housewives.
That's going to suck us into it or that we have to pay attention to. And that's why true crime is good. Because it's we're not going to do it. It's interesting enough. The story's the same. And they have said women in general listen to like 90% of true crime. I don't know what that's about.
Yeah. Yeah. That we need to. Yeah. You know what? I agree with you. And maybe the next episode I do, we'll talk about true crime, and then we'll just end up becoming a true crime episode.
I think I want to know because that's my theory. My theory is that for me, I listen to it because it's not something I'm going to get super focused on because.
Yeah, but it's focused enough that I like can talk about it and I enjoy it and like it's good to have around. I agree with you.
Okay. And so my hyperfixation was collecting vinyls.
Yes. And now your ADHD trait that you feel is unique to you.
Okay, so I like 60% of ADHDers, and I not to make any of the autistics or my Audis. Is that what we call them? The ADHD autistic folks? I call them Audis.
When it's spelled AUD, I read them as Audis.
But that's probably just an accent. I like
maybe.
So this maybe, is not a jab at you guys, okay? Because this is my story. I have sensory processing disorder. 60% of people with ADHD have sensory processing disorder. And the autistics or the Audis, they get a bit upset because in the DSM, autistics taught that the sensory stuff is brought up in their DSM, in their diagnostics. Yes, we know that ADHD people struggle with sensory processing, but it's usually a separate thing. So not all ADHDers are going to have sensory processing disorder.
No. Right? Is that the same as auditory processing disorder? Or is that something completely different?
They're a little different, but it's the same. Like that's a type of sense because it's one of your senses.
Because I have auditory processing disorder.
You have audio processing disorder.
Yeah.
Sensory processing, it's the same. It's like the textures of food, this. So, but what's interesting, and I'm not speaking for autistics because I'm not autistic. But I get this on my Instagram a lot because whenever I talk about sensory issues, people say, have you looked into if you are autistic? Yes, I have. I have. If I was autistic, I would tell you.
Yeah. You would have it in like your thing. Even me, I've been tested for it. No, I'm not. I would be very open. Right. I would talk about it. It'd be on the podcast.
Yeah. Exactly. For me,
no issue. Bad.
And the best diagnosis of this was all my autistic friends have been like, absolutely 100%, you are not autistic. So like better than any doctor, my autistic friends have been like, we don't claim you.
Yeah, we don't want you.
Which means I am one who just has the sensory processing disorder.
Yeah.
And the reason I will say this trait especially is because I also have really good vision. Okay. Like
I don't know what that is.
How do you measure good vision in Australia? Like 20/20? Do you
2020?
So mine was like 2015, right? It's like better.
I just put my glasses on.
It's like better than it was always like the highest level. Like when I go to my eye exams, my doctors are like, read this, and I'm like, I could do it, right? But I think this very good vision and sensory processing disorder and sensitivity to light and ADHD ability to observe absolutely everything at one time is the reason I'm an artist. And the first art I did was photography. And to me, it makes so much sense that this trait came from that, because if you are just sitting around looking at everything, yeah, it would make sense that to me, because people are like, how can you take a picture of nothing and make it look like something? And I think that's the trait of being extra sensitive to light.
And I'm just having an extra, yeah, okay.
And I also say that photography was one of the first, my first hyper, like that was the first hobby that really, but actually it's not, it's poetry, which we'll get into.
Which we will discuss.
In my mind, it was photography because I was like conscious adult when I was like, I choose photography. I'm going to start doing this. When I was about 15, I really started doing photography. I studied photography at school. I have like so many pictures. And I mean, I shot with film. I shot digital. I shoot both. I do installations. I do stuff with paint. Yeah, it makes sense now that it, and for me, what I said, well, I got working memory. I forgot what I was talking about. I got it back. It came back. I got my train of thought back. So if you've ever taken, if you've been a photographer, if you've been an artist, if you do any arts, you cannot be impatient. You cannot rush your art.
Okay? That's true.
So when I was undiagnosed, I always said photography was a thing that got me to slow down. It made me have to stop, like, because it made, because you had to, like, especially when I was shooting film, I'd have to wait. I'd just be like sitting there, like waiting for my shot, because
the
that's
sound for your shot.
Because I'm like, my hand might be there, and it's like, it was the only time I could probably be patient or force myself to be, because patience is not an ADHD trait.
No, it's not.
So
we really lack patience.
So yes. So that's why for me, photography was the first discipline, like patience. And that's why other, when they talk about like, especially young kids who get into things like sports or gymnastics, Simone Biles, right? If you look at Michael Phelps, Simone Biles, these people,
of course,
it's like the one, the athletes that are excellent at their sport, it's because that is their super focus. And it, that's their hyper focus. That's the only thing they want to do. And it's their own way of self-medicating.
And it just works. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're right. It's, I love that. And yours was photography.
Yeah, because I see everything. Now I know that. Now I know that I see everything. Now I know why I saw everything. Now I know, because you maybe when you were little, you know, everyone's like, oh, your ADHDers are so intuitive. It's not that we're intuitive. We're seeing so much more than other people see.
Yeah.
And so it's like,
and people think it's a deficit. Like, it's not a deficit. We see so much. And the reason it's a deficit is because we see so much. It's hard sometimes to process, but it's not an absence.
No,
it's not an absence.
It's an abundance of attention. It's a failure of attention to regulate the attention. So we can't be like, oh, I'm only going to focus on the teacher talking, because it's like, no.
No, and because it's like the clock ticking.
No, and it works against us if we try to focus on one thing. But that's what I'm saying. But then you can find a thing that is your hobby, that is your passion, that's your fixation. That, and most of the fixations, like you said, you will notice will be a calming effect on you.
But mine, it's singing. I sing.
Yeah.
Or like, mine's that and writing.
Or even the vinyl collections right now, because I don't know if you saw, I'm in the middle of grief too. I'm grieving, right? I lost my best friend at the beginning of this year.
I'm so sorry.
It's really sad. But he loved music, and I think the vinyls, and the reason Gen Z and people are going back to buying analog is because they missed this slower connection to what's around them.
And it's nostalgic. Yep.
And
yeah,
it's physical. It's tangible.
It is. Yep.
It's something you can hold in your hands. And it makes you listen, because, and it actually makes you have to get up too, because you have to switch the record.
That's true. And you really, and you also very, because I went through a phase where I collected a lot of vinyls. Like I was the vinyl girl. It was one of my hyperfixations. And it really, I really wanted to take care of it because I find a lot of the time with my ADHD, I'm quite rough with things. I lose things and they break. With this, I really was like, this is the record. Like, this is my grandfather's one. I want to look after it. I don't want to break it. I really tended to it. And then with other things, like I'll get a new phone or computer and I'm just like smashing, you know, the keys. I'm very clumsy.
I bought all the covers for my vinyl.
Oh, yeah.
And spent like a day putting them all in the covers. And I'm like, yeah, because it's also because they're expensive. Let's be honest. It's not the cheapest hobby. Yeah. Neither was photography growing up.
No. I also wanted to be a photographer. Maybe there's like a thread like ADHD is photography, vinyls, true crime. I'm seeing a lot of
art. It's creativity.
It's creativity. It is.
Creativity.
We are creative
people. And we might not all be artists. It might be observant. It might be behind the scenes art. But for me. Mm. No, art is my ADHD. I am creative. And the other bad side trait that I would say a lot of ADHDers struggle with is I'm a perfectionist, right? Undiagnosed perfectionist, smart girl.
Interesting.
These all go together, right? Because I was good at school. I was smart. Therefore, it was the only time people were like, you're really smart.
You can't have a problem.
And one, I'd be like, I'd have to prove that to everybody. Because on one hand, they'd be like, you're really smart, but why aren't your grades as good as you should be, right? And I love that because my dad said it was stupid because I'd get B's instead of A's. And he was like, who cares?
That's not, like, what? That's so weird.
But that was the closest I got to getting diagnosed in school. They were like, why are you getting B's instead of A's? And the reason was because I, you know, probably if I was medicated, I probably would have gotten A's. Like, if I knew it was ADHD.
And my dad's
just like, who cares? It's not like she's getting D's.
It's not like you're failing. Like, if they were like, you're a bright girl, why are you getting D's when you could be getting C's or B's, but like B's to A, like I would just take the B's.
I would get the B's without trying, right? And that's what they knew. I wasn't trying in school. I wasn't putting any effort into school. And that was because I could just do it and I knew I could do it.
Mm.
Except for math, which again, most girls struggle in math with ADHD, late diagnosed. But
I'm dyscalculic, so I'm very bad.
I'm not necessarily bad at math. I was never taught math to ADHD mind. We're also very visual people, as I said, especially me. That's why most people who have ADHD are better at things like geometry versus like algebra or physics, where there's like,
I found geometry easier. It's true. Yeah, no, it's tangible. It's visual.
This is also connected to our nonverbal working memory. And it also comes down very much connected to our concept of time, right? Time and math are pretty much the same sort of concept. It's just like, it's this thing that's everywhere. Math is everywhere. Yes.
Right? Everywhere. It is. And patterns and math. It's everywhere. And with dyscalculia, people are like, what do you mean you can't visualize patterns? Like if I give you like a dress, you can't see the pattern. I'm like, no, it's not that. It's mathematical, logical patterns that are everywhere. The time.
It's so abstract to our brains.
It's abstract.
We can't make that. That's where the nonverbal working memory comes in, and that's why a lot of us struggle with math, because it's such this concept that it's like we need to connect it to a tangible idea or a tangible thing.
Yeah, we can't put a face to it. That's why I think like I was very good, and also because I speak three languages, language, reading, it's very visual. I'm able to do it. Something comes out of it. Math, it's all up here. I can't see it.
Well, the other thing with math is you really do have to repeat the problems 100 times to learn them. That is what math is. It is doing the same problem over and over.
And we don't like doing the same thing. We just can't.
No, we can't. I hate it. And that's why I would do like 20 problems. And then I'd be like, okay, I get it. Because I did. But did it stick? Absolutely not.
I did one problem and I was like, yeah, I did it. Did I understand it? Not at all.
I think is that was wrong? The problem too. Probably. Is because in math, sometimes I get the right answer and they'd be like, how'd you get it? I'd be like, I don't know.
It's like show your work.
Yeah, the show your work. Like, I feel that's very ableist, actually. The whole idea of showing your work is ableist. Work.
Because at the end of the day, if I still came to the right answer, who cares what my working was?
Have you seen the video going around TikTok right now where they're asking?
No.
They're asking autistic people, this is a question, I'll just ask you. What do 5 and 2 have in common? No, 7 and 2. What do 7 and 2 have in common?
I have no idea.
They're both numbers is the answer, which I'm like, what? What? Look at your face. Exactly.
No. And why are they going up to autistic people to do this?
Because we wouldn't think that. Do you see your face? Do you see your face? How us thinking that 7 and 2 are numbers was the last thing we would ever answer that question with? Not because we don't understand that 7 and 2 are numbers.
Numbers.
But... they are numbers. But that to us would be so obvious. Would be like, it's almost like a trick question, even though it's not a trick question.
But it is.
But it's not. Like, that's
but it is.
I agree like, with you. Not. To me, it.
But it's not.
But it's really not. And for neurotypicals to say that they're both numbers, yeah, that makes sense.
Feels like a dig. It feels like a dig. That's a dig.
But to me, it's just, I would, yeah, they're numbers.
I thought it was going to be a math equation. I thought I was going to have to do like.
I can't be like, are they, but a lot of the answers is a lot of people have said they're sort of shaped the same. And the other is 5. A lot of people say 5 is what's. Which also doesn't make sense, but does. It does.
I'm going to do, you know what? After we get off, after we're done with this interview, I'm going to ask my dad, who's ADHD, a question. And then I'm going to ask my mum and we'll see
you
what they.
Tell me what happens because, yeah.
I will.
Neurotypicals will just be like, oh, easy. They're both numbers. And I feel like for us, it's just like, that's the last possible thing. That
numbers. And numbers are made up. So well, like, whatever.
It's because it's too obvious. Obviously, yeah, they're numbers. Why are you asking? Yeah, we know they're numbers.
Numbers, like, why?
But why would
asking?
That be the thing that they have in common, right? Because to us, that's already stated in the obvious of them. That wouldn't be the answer because that doesn't make any sense.
That doesn't. Yeah.
But yet it does. That's what I said. But yet it does.
Yet it does. I will be. I'm gonna test it. I'm gonna actually record it, and I'll send it to you. I'm gonna record my mom and my dad.
Let's see how the neurotypical does. Maybe
they'll understand it. So let's get into it. I feel like we've already covered so much ground, but the thing I want to ask you about is, so you said that you are an ADHD educator, which like we discussed earlier, is different from being a coach. Whilst coaches are like hella important, you're a teacher by trade. My parents are both teachers, but they're not ADHD teachers. They teach languages. Tell me about that. What is an ADHD educator? I want to know more.
Well, it's like that, like I said. So I can explain like time blindness or even that concept, that thing we just said about 7 and 2, right?
Yeah.
Everyone's like, well, we just take that and then we explain the why, right? And the why is because we're big picture thinkers, right? So when you're asking us about these two numbers, like numbers is already implied to us. It's already in the context of the situation. So you're looking at a bigger picture, trying to figure out this puzzle, which is also why we make everything far too complicated than it needs to be.
Yes.
We like complicated. I mean.
Yes. But then we get frustrated and overwhelmed.
Well, it's also because we don't, we don't follow instructions, right? That's like a big one. ADHDers don't follow instructions. And so, for example, I'll teach about this. Why don't we follow instructions? Well, one, instructions are not made for us. They are made for neurotypical people. So like that, right?
That's true.
So the way that they would go in this is a linear process that they deem is the correct order of how you do that. And most people with ADHD, we can't prioritize because of our interest-based nervous system, because of how our brain category, like we don't know what's more, everything is equally important to us, right?
Yes. Yes.
And so the more, so my last course I did, what I tend to be teaching the most about now is just our executive functions. So we have 7 major executive functions as mm-hmm. defined by Russell Barkley, because we actually have millions of executive functions is essentially just thinking.
Yes.
But the 7 major executive functions take place in our prefrontal cortex, right? Our prefrontal mm-hmm. cortex of our brain is the doing part of our brain.
Mm-hmm.
The back part of our brain is the knowing part of our brain. Okay, so
mm-hmm.
how Barkley describes it, how many people describe it, is we don't have a problem with the knowledge. We know things.
It's not an absence of knowledge.
Yeah, there's lack of communication to the doing part, the executive dysfunction. And so I usually explain to people exactly how executive dysfunction shows up.
Mm-hmm.
So, like,
tell me, because I've got all of it.
Yeah, part of it would be like, if you really want to clean your house and you're sitting yes. on your couch and you're like, yeah. I should clean my house, but you're not doing it, right? The easiest thing is this, is that's executive dysfunction. Because if you wanted to do it, you would just do it. And with ADHD,
you would do it. And you know how to do it. You know, like, I need to clean my house. I need to vacuum. I need to do the dishes. Like, you're not stupid.
No,
you know.
So it's either, usually, you have to ask yourself, well, why am I not doing it? Is it important? Usually it's not. Do I have to clean my house? No, I don't. Do I have to fold my laundry? No, I don't. It's boring. There's no dopamine at the end of this.
I don't win anything. It's not a game.
Nobody cares. Nobody's coming.
No.
But what about in your exact situation? But your friend is coming over. You're going to clean your house. You're not even going to think about it. Because it became urgent, right? Because
urgency motivates.
Because it became a necessity. So I would say most of the time, if you're not doing what you're quote unquote supposed to be doing with your executive dysfunction, it's because your brain has deemed it not that important. And your brain is boss. And then you are trying to force your brain to do what it's already decided it's not going to do.
It's like a paralysis.
Yeah, but the more I teach this to my students, the more you can just, and I think the easiest concept, which is also the hardest concept that's taken me the longest time to understand, when people talk about now or not now. Okay? We really do live in a now or not now thing, but it's not how people think. Not now is not another, not in the future. It's just not now, right? Because we don't have any limit. So when you see yourself, okay, I have to do something, and you have that paralysis, just go through the list.
Yeah.
Is it now or not? Am I going to fold the laundry? No. Okay, not now. And if you go through all the things, eventually your brain will settle on now.
We'll
do the thing.
Is that the same as like when my parents say, can you do the dishes? And I say, do I have to do it now?
I mean,
or is that just me being insolent?
I mean, there's a million things about that. One, dishes are gross. It's the thing I hate the most because of my sensory thing, like the wet.
Fair.
And everyone's like,
there's something really disgusting about touching food that's in the sink.
Like, wear rubber gloves. I'm like, that's even worse.
No, I don't want to.
That's even worse. Yes, I know. I agree with you. Ew, gross. They get all like, steamy and sweaty. Oh, yes, I know.
Absolutely.
But now and not now is just like, you can't force your brain to do what it's decided it's not going to do. And I think the problem is that our knowing part of our brain in the neurotypical world thinks that we can. But you can't see without your glasses. No amount of you being like, eyes work better.
Do it.
Do
eat
it.
Carrots.
You know how to see.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We spend so much time beating ourselves up when our brain is clearly just telling us what it's not going to do. So, and it's also, it's a disability. We have to acknowledge that ADHD is a disability.
Well, let's talk about that because
executive dysfunction is a disability. Most people.
I was going to say this, and I don't want it to come off because some people could take it the wrong way, and I don't know. Like, but it's like the way what you're describing with the executive dysfunction. It's like people who suffer from like a motor neuron disease. Like they have like they want to be able to make, let's say, a part of their body move or do something, but because of the damage that's been done, they just can't. It's not as simple as just will yourself to walk. That part of the brain, it's not connecting with their ability to be able to do that thing. But obviously it's very different from being like ADHD, no, but being physically disabled.
Thing. Executive
but it sounds very similar.
Executive dysfunction is the disability. Emotional dysregulation is the disability. Yeah.
A disability.
Okay. And I know we don't like people are afraid of the word disability because yes, ADHD people can do a lot of things and it's like become the disability Olympics and like how disabled. It's like that's not
the are you?
Point.
That's not the point. And we're not competing and we're not trying to if steal. You
have
you know.
To file your taxes and you can't file your taxes because your executive function won't let you file your taxes because your taxes are boring. No amount of I have to do this is going to make your brain do it. Right?
You know, that you put it like that, it's very interesting because I, for the longest time, the reason I don't and consider myself disabled is not because of shame or embarrassment or anything like that. I don't feel the label fits me because I think when I think of disability, I think of physical disabilities or really debilitating, you know, intellectual disabilities. And I have a vision of what that looks like. But now that you put it like, if you cannot do your taxes or you cannot get up and do this thing because your brain won't let you, that is disabling.
Yeah.
So that's given me a lot to think about.
Well, I say that
didn't think of it that way.
Our executive functions, the problem is this, with neurotypical people, they have an assistant. I like to say, or the bouncer at a club. The bouncer at the club is checking IDs. The bouncer at the club is making sure nobody's fighting. The bouncer at the club is doing its job. It's being like, this is the important information. I'm going to let it through. The bouncer's kicking out the riffraff, right? We don't have a bouncer. We don't have an assistant, okay? So it all comes in at once. And that's why if you ask people when they say, just write an email, it's not that hard. Because to them, writing an email is a single process.
It's second nature.
No, it's one step. Because their executive functions, their assistant in their prefrontal cortex does all the steps that for every ADHDer has to do. Open the inbox, find the inbox, find like all the steps that we put into...
It's insurmountable. No. It's true. And I'm trying to think of examples where I'm asked to do something that is very much one task. And I'm using air quotes, but it's actually not.
Brushing your teeth.
I need to get up. I need to get that thing. And people are like, oh, but just like get over it. And
brushing
it's like,
your
no,
teeth,
it's not.
Brushing your teeth is the easiest ADHD example because ADHDers, as much as they don't want to admit it, so many of them struggle with brushing their teeth unless they develop this habit very early on. Why? Yeah. Why do we struggle? Do we want to have bad hygiene? No. We're getting in the shower.
No.
Or any of these things, right? But brushing your teeth is like, it's not hard. It's not hard to brush your teeth.
No.
But,
objectively, no.
But if you're in bed and you have to get up and you have to go to the sink and you have to do this and you have to stand there and then you're supposed to brush your teeth for 2 minutes and we have no concept of time, right? It's your brain's like, we're not going to do that. It's not that, and like, you'll be like, eh. But that's because for neurotypical people, there is no problem. It's one step. It's just one thing.
Yeah, it is one step. Like, my boyfriend, God bless him, like, I'm very good with, like for me, I don't know what you'd call it. Like, I hyper-focus on showering. Like, showering is something that I love to do. Like I take too many showers in a day. It's like my joy. Like it's a sensory thing that I really enjoy and gravitate to. Like I'm going to have a shower. I can't do my homework right now, but I can have a shower, but it takes me so long to do it. So I will lie in bed in my towel ready. Like I want to go and shower. And my boyfriend who I adore and he's great. He's like, babe, just like go do it. Like go do the thing. I'm like, no, I need to then put that down. Then I need to do this thing. I'm like, just let me sit with this. And he's like, but just go. Like, you just have to get in the shower. I'm like, no, there's all these other steps.
The problem is that is exactly what we need and don't need. So it depends on the day of how much of that can help or not. Because sometimes it's like, go do it now. And you'll do it, right? So with
and I'll do it, yeah.
With those smaller tasks, you can, right? I call it like, there's like a millisecond. Cause like I said, this is not about knowledge. This is about the doing, right? So maybe you'll be like, oh, I should take that cup downstairs. And the thing is you cannot think about it because that's the thing. Neurotypicals aren't thinking about it. That they will get it. Then their executive functions will take over and they'll just do the task, right? Which means it's not taking up any mental real estate for them. Okay. None. They just do it. They're not thinking, oh, but you know, all those things or the steps or the breakdown or no neuro, because their prefrontal cortex, their executive functions, cut out this. This becomes automatic. Okay. But so the trick for, that's why I said the now or not now thing too. And this trick is, if you think about it, before you let your ADHD take over or that executive function, there is like this millisecond when you'll be like, no, I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
Right. And the better you get at recognizing your executive dysfunction, the better you can get at, no, I'm just going to do it. And I have to do it now or else I'm not going to do it.
Do it. And it's going to be insurmountable.
Yeah. But there are days when that's not going to work. No matter how much you want to clean your house, you're not cleaning your house. No matter how.
It's just not happening today. No,
how important. And that is the disability. And it's like, if you were sick.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be like, oh, I'm sick, but I have, you know. I mean, ADHDers beat yourself up for being sick too. But I mean.
yeah. That's true. So you know what? You've given me so much to think about. I never thought of it that way. You know, I guess it's just because I thought executive like dysfunction, like it's just a thing that we have. But when you put it like that, when you are unable to do certain basic tasks, which a lot of people who are disabled are unable to do those tasks, they need extra assistance. ADHD can be disabling, and that's not to, and we're not competing here. And that's why I never like to get into the conversation, because we always have to quantify ourselves and be like, we're not trying to say we're this, we're that, because people get really upset.
In America, it's classified as a disability. It's a disability.
Interesting. See, here in Australia, it is considered a neurological condition, but you have to, in order to qualify for disability, we have something called the NDIS. It's the National Disability Insurance Scheme. You have to show, you're working. So you have to show that it has emotional and social impact. So you have to show that it prevents you from basic things.
Emotional and social impact does affect every ADHDer, and it's the same. Like autism assessment, at least has their like their different 1, 2, 3 categories, right? And the high and low, and even they have a problem with the wording of it. But ADHD is the same. It is a spectrum. Oh my goodness, it's a spectrum.
It is. Right? It is a spectrum.
And like,
but yeah, you know what? Maybe we need to recoin the term, because autism, it's autism. It's what? ASD, autism spectrum disorder. ADHD. Yeah, we need to maybe include spectrum.
But it is a spectrum, and
it is a spectrum. No, it absolutely is. It's literally a spectrum.
And that is. One, whenever we say it's a spectrum, this is the same with autism. People believe that neurotypical is on that spectrum. It is not. Neurotypical is not on the spectrum, right? There is a spectrum of high, I don't like the words, but it's what we got, the high function, low function.
High functioning, right? Air quotes, we're saying.
Yes. And the thing is, like autistic people, like anybody in the spectrum, we move throughout the spectrum. We are not always going to be like the best. And that's an executive functioning, especially your executive functioning.
And as you grow older, you take medication, you mature, it changes. It moves up and down.
It actually changes every day.
Every day. That's true. Like I can say, and people don't understand when I say, when I was younger, I was a lot more ADHD. And people are like, what do you mean? I'm like, when I was younger, when I was not medicated, when I was also just a child, and children in general are active, they are immature, they are silly, my ADHD was a lot worse. Now that I've gotten older, I've matured more, I have responsibilities, I'm medicated, it's changed. And depending on the day, when I'm on my period, my ADHD is at its peak. It's disgraceful.
But that's also been proven. That's what I'm saying. Because
I get enough sleep,
yeah, because it's all this, and that's what I'm saying. So the days when you have to do something and you're sitting there and you're beating yourself up, no amount of beating yourself up is going to get you to do the thing. So the two things I tell ADHDers is, one, acknowledge executive dysfunction when it's bad. Sometimes we can motivate ourselves to do the thing like anybody else.
Yeah.
We can do all of our tricks. We can put on our favorite song. We can drink some water. We can walk. We can do whatever it is and motivate ourselves to do the thing. But sometimes no amount of motivation, no amount of your tricks, no amount of anything is going to do it. And that's when we are in that quote unquote paralysis, and we're sitting
paralysis.
And then we get obsessed, then we ruminate about
it. You feel terrible. I do it. And even though like I'm quite a positive person, I know when I'm doing like I'm in the paralysis mode, and I tell myself, you're stuck in that ADHD paralysis. This is so bad. you're so bad. And it's like, that doesn't help. It just makes me feel like shit. No.
And I feel like
it just makes me feel like shit.
It's easier if you say, okay, I'm suffering bad executive dysfunction today. It's not going to happen. Treat it like a sick day. Walk away from that project, because usually what happens when you're stuck in that rumination? The next day you can do it, no problem. It's the exact same task. Nothing's changed.
Yeah.
But then it's your brain has decided today it can do that.
Today's the day, yeah. Because it's a spectrum.
Well, and it's also, it's now or not now. And I'm just saying, the now more you can incorporate this, I have to clean my sheets, now or not now. Your brain can be like, not now. Like, it makes life so much easier than
before. So much easier.
Because it just takes out that decision. For me, when I apply this to be like, okay, I need to do this. Is it now or not? It's not now. Okay, it's not happening.
That's not
because
now.
If it's not now, it's literally not now. Because like I like did something, I think I like cleaned out my car one day. And it was just like,
good on you.
But it's just like, why? And everyone's like, well, what sparks the now? I don't know. It's just now. It happened. Know. Why do you?
Sometimes it now just happens. Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's because I enjoy it. Like, you know, I enjoy the thing. And then sometimes it's like, no, I just don't enjoy it. I don't enjoy it today. It's too difficult.
Well,
and I used to get told a lot, like, Lucy, you need to build up your, what is it? Not determination. They used another word, like teachers would say it, like, you know, when things are hard, you tend to abandon it. You tend to not want to do it.
Persevere. You need to persevere.
No, they used a word. It was
power through. We're not good at powering through.
Something like that. And look, admittedly, it is a trait of mine that isn't necessarily ADHD. When things are difficult and I know I'm not going to be good at them the first time, I'm like, well, I'm just never going to do it because I don't want to fail. So that's another commentary. But teachers would be like, you've just got to persevere. Like, you've just got to do the thing, Lucy. It's a lack of motivation. It's like, it's got nothing to do with my moral character. I have a problem in my brain.
But that
this isn't me being like, difficult. I'm not being an ass. But I actually have a problem.
So back to the ADHD educator, I'd say actually that comes back down to perfectionism, and that comes down to productivity, and that comes down to ADHDers, and that we only thrive when we are good at the thing, because the things that are easy to us come very easily to us.
That's true. It's true.
So it's not that you're scared to fail. You're protecting yourself because whenever you did something bad, you were told you were bad. You were told you were wrong. You were told you were doing it wrong. We didn't actually. And then when you did something well, you were like praised a lot for it. And we weren't as growing up.
And it feels good.
Yeah. And it's just more like they said, there's that it's like not a real study. So that's the thing too. I will say this, the study of the 20,000 negative comments that you've heard, it's not a real study, but the guy did observe. He went to the classroom. He observed how many corrections the neurodivergent students got versus the non. And then he came up with this rough number based on this, which means that somebody could actually do the study. It's not that it's not there. It's just it wasn't peer reviewed. He didn't do that. And he estimated this, but it's actually way more than that.
Of course it is.
It's way more than that.
I'm not surprised.
He was only looking at people in a school environment. So that doesn't count all the time. Your mom yelled at you for not doing this thing every time you're doing this. So whenever people also bring up the trauma argument, all neurodivergents are traumatized. So it does not matter. Okay. Mm. It's like some of you might be misdiagnosed and have CPTSD and not be neurodivergent. That's very possible. Okay. But all neurodivergents are traumatized because we were told constantly, at least 20,000 times, that we are doing it wrong.
Wrong. Yeah. Yeah.
And perfectionism, like I said, with me runs deep because I had to be smart. I had to do it perfectly because there is no gray areas with ADHD. It is all or nothing all the time. So for you to be like, it's too hard, I'm not going to do it. That's fine. That's you doing nothing. Because the flip side of that, if you were good at it, you'd probably put your all into it 100,000%.
And I would slay. And I would slay it. Yes.
And that's why I feel like the funniest thing is people are like, oh, just half-ass it. ADHDers are incapable of doing anything half-ass.
Yeah, the half-assing thing. That's why whenever like I've done something and teachers are like, you really half-assed that, I'm like, no, I didn't half-ass that.
I think I feel like this is a little bit difficult because for me personally, I can't, if I care about something, there's no way I'd half-ass it.
No, I can't. If it's something I care about, I really put I do it properly. Do I obsess and get upset over it? No, but I don't think I can half.
It's more like we need to actually learn to be better at doing things half-assed, because actually most neurotypical people, most average people, half-assed. Most non-perfectionists do things half-assed, and that's how they half-assed. Get so much done, because they're not sitting there obsessing about,
and they're not finishing, yeah,
and
they're not following through.
Well, the other thing, so what I teach is that, so I will break down a big concept like our executive functions about this. So that's what I do in education. So in my course, the next course I'll have, which will be my executive function course, we go through the 7 ones each week. So week one, we'll talk about self-awareness, and I'll be like, this is self-awareness. And I love self-awareness with ADHDers, because they're like, I'm self-aware. It's like, Are you really?
Yeah, it's a tricky one. Self-awareness.
Yeah, you're not. I promise you. Yeah. I promise you, as an ADHD educator, you are not as self-aware as you think you are. 0%.
See, I always use the example. Maybe it's a bad one. I saw it online. It's like ADHDers know what they are doing. Let's say in a social situation is inappropriate, but they don't care. Autistics have no idea that it's not appropriate.
I agree.
That checks out.
I agree with that with social, like the social things, because we don't care, but that's not what I'm talking about. Our self-awareness comes from when you like have a trait and you're like, I don't do that. Right. I'm not.
Okay.
So like for me, my biggest one was not closing doors or drawers or cabinets. Okay. I was like, I close drawers.
It's like, no, you don't.
No, I don't. I absolutely do not. But that's just one thing I noticed. And I was like, oh, or the reason doctors are forced to ask for a second opinion is because we are terrible at reporting what is wrong with us. And again,
well, that's why they need someone else. Yeah. It's true. Every diagnosis, also because I was a minor when I was getting tested for ADHD, autism, when they would ask me stuff like, do you find yourself being distracted and finding it hard to make friends? And I'd be like, nah, no, I'm fine. No. And then my parents are like,
yeah, she does.
And teachers are like, yeah, she does. Like, they need like someone else. Not that your opinion is invalid, but.
How many times have you run into the door or walked into a table?
Oh my God.
This is self-awareness. You are not aware of your physical space.
It's not self-awareness in terms of a social thing. It's everything else as well, which social awareness comes into it. But yeah, it is that other, like, close the light when you leave the room.
Or just
put that away.
We are hyper aware.
We are hyper aware.
It's like sometimes, but that is not our default. I'm sorry. No, we like to think that because we've been put in so many situations where we have to be like, where you're masking, where you have to be hyper aware. So when we're put in that, we feel that is the default. But the default is we are really unaware. We don't know how loud we're talking. We weren't listening to the conversation, so we say something inappropriate. Yeah. We are not always present in the, like we're not as self-aware as we.
I don't know how loud I'm being. That is true.
No, we definitely don't know how loud we're being. We don't know what was actually said before us sometimes because we are checked out.
And it's not because we're rude or anything like that. It's just we can't help it.
It's like sometimes we just weren't listening. And then like maybe, and then you're like, oh, like that.
Oh, yeah. What'd you say? Yeah, I agree. So you think I'm ugly? No, I wasn't listening. Did you just say?
Yeah. So self-awareness, like that's the first one. That's the first executive function. And like I also explained, like you have to think of a baby when they discover their feet. Like, oh, I have feet. That is the baby developing the executive function of self-awareness, right?
Yes.
So you can see that. And the point of your executive functions is that they develop and grow as you grow. So you were talking about how you were more ADHD when you were younger. But again, that's because your prefrontal cortex is not developed fully until you were 26 years old. And yes, your hormone.
Oh my God. I've got like, I'm 23.
Your hormones are going up and down every month.
Yeah, of course. And it's also on that and just being a teenager and being a kid. So it changes.
Like, your prefrontal cortex is not even fully developed. So
I know. Sometimes I have days where I'm like, wow, this thing is really not developed. I cannot wait for it to develop.
It doesn't really get any better, though. And that's the problem. But for neurotypicals, I think it does. I think a lot of that risk-taking, that impulsivity, those, like, bad decisions, part of it is being young. But for ADHDers, it's a combination of both. And especially with girls, like I said, for me, undiagnosed, my risk taking would be like hypersexuality. And especially if you grow up in a world like the patriarch, where like,
Yes.
and so being a smart girl wasn't sexy. So I cared so much about that, right?
I've got quite a few. I've had a few people in my life who were ADHD, and it was definitely like the risk taking was, hypersexuality,
For young girls especially, dangerous,
which we're
hypersexual.
not shame. Yeah, we're talking about dangerous. Like, obviously, I don't care what people do, like adults do. Like, if you are safe and happy, like you go have the best time in the world. I don't care. But when we're like, 13 in
Putting
high school
yourself
and then
in
saying
dangerous situations.
crazy stuff, that I'm like, that I need to go tell a teacher because that's like, I'm concerned for you. And it was just so common. They're like, no, but I'm just having fun. And it's
But
like,
that's, I mean, like the problem with hypersexualization with the girls and with ADHD is because on one hand we are taught to be hypersexualized, on the other hand they're taught, oh, we can't. But it's like ADHD again is all or nothing. So it's either you are hypersexual or you're hyposexual, and it's going to stay that way. That's what I'm saying. We're always going to fall on one end of the spectrum, and that's why people will be like, I don't do that.
But I do the other
I do
one.
the
I
other.
do. No. It's true. It's true. Like,
I'm never
no.
late. Okay, how early are you?
Yes.
How early are you for something? Because it's not that you are not on time. I do not know an ADHD who arrives on time. Okay, they will arrive. They
I'm
will
kidding.
arrive
I'm pointing at myself.
late or early. You're not on time.
Yeah,
You're there
that's
15
true. That's
minutes early,
true.
an hour early, an absurd amount of
Yeah,
time
okay.
early,
Yeah.
because you are so
Yeah.
scared of being late that you've designed a
Yeah.
mechanism that is so. That's why people will say, I don't have problems being late. I go, what time do you leave your house for a 15-minute appointment that's 15 minutes away? How early do you prepare for that? Because
Oh, this. And yeah, like, do you know when I set up this podcast? Like, I set myself up last night. My boyfriend had to show me how to set everything up, even though it only takes about 5 minutes maybe to do this whole setup. It took me a whole evening of learning it, getting up early today and setting it up so I
That's
could
what I
be
meant.
ready
But
and
that's
here.
again coming back to your self-awareness, because if you've been masking your whole life, if you've created systems your whole life that exist, you can easily say, I don't do that, because you are reading just because also the DSM is written terribly and written for little boys. And there's a million, we could get into a whole thing about why
But the DSM,
about, well,
yes.
not just the DSM, about how ADHD diagnostic criteria is just
Not great.
flawed.
Yes.
All of it's flawed.
Well, it's outdated. It's
It's
archaic.
just
It's,
also, especially for adults, they've developed systems for this. It doesn't mean the trait is not there.
Yes.
You
My
still have
dad
the
says this a
trait.
lot. He says this a lot. He's like, people thought like I would grow out of this. I didn't grow out of my ADHD. I just got better at managing it and masking it. And that's why I was diagnosed. How old was he? I think 53.
My dad just acknowledged his ADHD. He's like 70 something. And he was
My
like,
God.
is this why
Yeah.
I like, I'm like, yes.
And it's crazy because whenever I would like get into trouble at school or have issues at school and teachers would say, Lucy, she does this thing. My dad's like, I did that when I was young.
Yeah, I mean that's,
She'll grow out of
but
it.
that's
And it's
also the
like, yeah.
self-awareness of the parents, like when they won't accept that their kid's ADHD because they're not acknowledging the self-awareness. So that's what I
The
meant.
self-awareness,
So
Yeah.
self-awareness is the first one, and we think we're great because we've had to develop masking skills, which take hyper-awareness. But think of how many times you were told you're too loud, you're too wrong, you run into the wall. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, you still lack that self-awareness.